If life starts approximately 1 billion years ago, we will have to wait 400,000 years to see the aberration of the first nerve cells. This is where life as we know it begins. Brains in formation of only a few milligrams. It's not possible to determine any sign of intelligence yet. It acts more as a reflex. One neuron, you're alive. Two neurons, you're moving. And with movement, interesting things begin to happen. Animal life on Earth goes back millions of years. Yet most species only use 3 to 5% of its cerebral capacity. But it isn't until we reached human beings at the top of the animal chain that we finally see a species use more of its cerebral capacity. 10% may not seem like much, but it's a lot if we look at all we've done with it. Now let's discuss a special case. The only living being that uses its brain better than us, the dolphin. It is estimated that this incredible animal uses up to 20% of its cerebral capacity. In particular, this allows it to have an echolocation system that is more efficient than any sonar invented by mankind. But the dolphin did not invent the sonar, it developed it naturally. And this is the crucial part of our philosophical reflection we have today. Can we therefore conclude that humans are concerned more with having than being? For primitive beings like us, life seems to have only one single purpose, gaining time. And it is going through time seems to be also the only real purpose of each of the cells in our bodies. To achieve that aim, the mass of the cells that make up earthworms and human beings has only two solutions, be immortal or to reproduce. If its habitat is not sufficiently favorable or nurturing, the cell will choose immortality. In other words, self-sufficiency and self-management. On the other hand, if the habitat is favorable, they will choose to reproduce. That way, when they die, they hand down essential information and knowledge to the next cell, which hands it down to the next cell, and so on. Thus, knowledge and learning are handed down through time. Let's imagine for a few moments what our life would be like if we could access, let's say, 20% of our brain's capacity. This first stage would give us access to and control of our own body. Well, for the moment, it's just hypothesis, I confess. But if you think about it, it's troubling to realize that the Greeks, the Egyptians, and the Indians had notion of cells centuries before the invention of the microscope. And what to say about Darwin, whom everybody took for a fool when he put forth his theory of evolution? It's up to us to push the rules and laws and go from evolution to revolution. 100 billion neurons per human, of which only 15% are activated. There are more connections in the human body than there are stars in the galaxy. We possess a gigantic network of information to which we have almost no access. Well, the next stage would probably be control of other people. But for that, we would need to access at least 40% of our brain's capacity. After control of ourselves and others, come control of matter. But now we're entering into the realm of science fiction, and we don't know any more than the dog who watches the moon.
By the time I was in the 11th grade, my focus had shifted from me being an actor to what I was going to be doing in life. I wanted to be in the military. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. I wanted to fly airplanes. So that was my focus from about the 11th grade until I got into the Air Force. But when I got in and started to live that life, it occurred to me that I had been functioning from my romance with movies. You know, you've seen only war movies, and so you're thinking reality when it's all make-believe. you're really expecting a camera to be mounted somewhere on this thing. You're not expecting to be actually killing people. So get out of here and go on and be an actor. So that was it. It was just like one of those moments in your life when you have to change roads. You always make the choice and road you take, but the road always splits. It always forks, and sometimes it might fork three or four different directions. When you have made your choice, it is Providence that is your guide. Good, bad, or indifferent. Your fate lies in that. And as Providence will guide you, I walked out of the post in San Bernardino, out of the Air Force, free and clear, and I was only San Bernardino from L.A., so it was a short bus ride to where I belonged, or thought I belonged at the time.
I don't think wealth and genetics have anything to do with each other, actually. If you're born in the U.S., it really doesn't matter the condition of your birth. What matters is what you inherit from your nurturing, from your environment, whether or not you're going, I'm just from the standpoint of having been born with little. You can hear, you can always get out of that. If, say you're born as one of the untouchables in India, there you are. And if you're born into the super rich, there you are. Here, you can be born to the super rich, but three, four generations down the line, gone. We still here don't abandon the idea that it isn't finite. Now, I was born in Memphis, Tennessee. I had a long haul from where I came from to here, but here we are. Right? So the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and here we sit at the dining table. Well, everybody can. Everybody doesn't. Courage is key to life itself. There are a lot of people who are born in situations where they say, I'll never get out of this. So they won't. I say to people who say, I would like to have done so and so and so. So you could have done it. So, I couldn't get out of here. Man, the bus runs every day.
So as I said, I went to the movies all the time. I've seen the movies. And at some point, it struck me rather dramatically how much I wasn't in the movies. Not the way I needed to be in the movies. And if you look at a lot of the disaster movies in that period, the only people left on the planet were white. So now my thing is, if I get in the movies, I want to make sure that I speak about that. That if I'm able to do it, I want to talk about it. So there was a period there in the early 80s when I didn't get any work because I would ask these questions. I auditioned, I don't think I even got to audition. I interviewed for the movie The Thing, the remake. So I read the script and I go back for the audition and the producer or the director, one of those, said, did you read the script? I said, yes. What did you think? I said, we've got 11 people at the South Pole, 8 of them are scientists. And then you have a cook, a mechanic, and something else. They're all black. None of the scientists are. What do you think? I think, needless to say, I didn't get that job.
There are those of us who like to venture to the unexplored, to see the beauty in the strange and unknown. Those of us who go out there with a sense of wonder.
It's the magic of risking everything for a dream that nobody sees but you.
Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the shadow of the shade. Yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me, unafraid.
God.
It matters not how straight the gate, how punishment charged the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged. Their feathers are just too bright. And when they fly away, the part of you that knows it was a sin to lock them up does rejoice.
Let me tell you about a voice.
The one that whispers. It tells me what's right and what's not. When to leave and where to go. It's not Shakespeare. It does not speak in memorable lines. My inner voice always gives it to me straight. Tells me who my real friends are. When to say yes, when to say no. Whether the person sitting next to me is the one I'll be spending the rest of my life with.
You already know that dedication, hard work, and perseverance gives positive results.
Let your instincts guide you.
Your 15 minutes are up. You better start thinking of something else.
What else to do? What do I want to do? I was picked a day that I was going to go to the Taxi and Limousine Commission to try and get my license. And the day before I decided to go, I got a call from my agent. Paul Newman is casting, wants to see you. Getting a job is like having money in your pocket. If you got it, you can get it. Strangely enough, so this was in September. By October, I had a TV job, an off-Broadway show. I was directing a play, and I was going to be in January going to do this movie. It's called Harry and Sons. Go figure. What would you do if you weren't an actor, if you didn't make it as an actor? What would you do? I have no idea. I would act somewhere, because I'll die if I don't.
We're all struggling.
That's the truth.
Thank you.
If there's magic in boxing, it's the magic of fighting battles beyond endurance, beyond cracked ribs, ruptured kidneys, and detached retinas. It's the magic of risking everything for a dream that nobody sees but you.
I remember getting up one morning and going to work. Just another day like any other, except it was the first day after I knew about pregnancy. And I felt this fear for the first time ever. I remember thinking,
How can I bring a child into a world like this? How can a person grow up with all this around them? But if you choose to have this baby, then you spoil that kid every chance you get. That's about all the advice I can give you, Tracy.
Today I'm feeling presidential.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. I really thought of keeping you on just to fuck with you over the next 3.5 years. That's the old way of doing things. David, since this is his last day before retirement, David gets the honor of marching you right out the front door.
You're joking, right?
No.
I want $10 million a year for the rest of my life.
Let me get this straight. You think that your client, one of the wealthiest, most powerful men in the world, is secretly a vigilante who spends his nights beating criminals to a pulp with his bare hands? And your plan is to blackmail this person? Good luck.
And what are you? So full of hate you just want to go out and fight everybody. Because you've been whipped and chased by hounds. Well, that might not be living, but it sure as hell ain't dying. And dying's what these white boys been doing for going on 3 years now. Dying by the thousands. Dying for you, fool. I know, because I dug the graves. And all the time I'm digging, I'm asking myself when, oh Lord, is going to be our time. Well, time's coming when we're going to have to ante up. Ante up and kick in like men. Like men!
What did they tell you this place was?
They didn't tell me anything.
Earl told me exactly what it was when he sent me down here. Dead end. Place to keep me from causing the board any more trouble. Come on.
Sometimes it makes me sad, though. Andy being gone. I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged. Their feathers are just too bright. And when they fly away, the part of you that knows it was a sin to lock them up does rejoice. But still, the place you live in is that much more drab and empty that they're gone.
Those few days were like one big roller coaster ride. And like most rides, we ended up where we began. Still, it reminded us who we are, what we have. It was worth it, if only for that. Maybe one day we'll sell, stop climbing the stairs. But for now, we'll just deal with what is. The important thing is, it brought us back here, together. Back to our senses, and to our home.
The wave hit Europe and Africa too. Millions were lost. Countless more left homeless. But the waters receded. Cities fall, but they are rebuilt. And heroes die, but they are remembered. We honor them with every brick we lay, with every field we sow, with every child we comfort, and then teach to rejoice in what we have been re-given. Our planet, our home. So now, let us begin.